Welcome back to Public Address Radio on Radio Live. One of the finalists at this year's Montana Book Awards is Oliver Stead's Art of New Zealand Icons. It contains a selection of 40 iconic works Stead considers have become an important part of the common visual currency of the country. And Oliver joins us now. So, tell us about your book.
Well, the book is a collection of pictures. It's a picture book. It's a selection of images from New Zealand art, photography, sculpture. So they're visual images. And they're also symbols of New Zealand and what New Zealand has meant to the artists who made them over the years, or they capture some aspect of New Zealand, or, you know, they help to locate us in a place and time. And also they've got some kind of visual currency in that. Many of the images that have been selected are quite well known to readers and, you know, watchers of TV and people who study and enjoy the media in New Zealand.
Because you've gone so far as to call them icons, haven't you? I mean, these are art icons. So what separates a New Zealand artwork and elevates it to an iconic status, I suppose?
Well, it was the brief from the publisher to, you know, select 40 so-called iconic works. And you often hear a lot of groans about the word icon because it's like the word passion, you know, it's like so done to death it kind of loses its value. But I did art history at university, and we were trained to study iconography. And so, you know, there's definitely a place for the study of what pictures mean. And hopefully with this selection I've gathered together some images that are well known to people and that people can relate to, you know, personally, because they've seen it at a point in their lives, or it's come to represent some wider thing that was going on in the community at the time.
Was it hard to get it down to 40?
Oh, yes. I mean, that was both the discipline and the agony of it. And so then I had to sort of be ruthless and edit things out. And of course there are many, many New Zealand images which are both famous and personally attractive to me, which I didn't put in because they didn't necessarily fit into what I loosely defined an icon as being, which was an image that represented sort of more than the sum of its parts to a community of people.
Would you still pick the same choices if you were to do it another time around now? Or are there some that you left out that you really regret that didn't make it in there?
I think if you started again from this point in time, because time's moved on, you know, you'd probably want to pick up some more recent event. My purpose, I suppose, was to give a kind of a historical overview as well as a personal selection. So it starts really, really early, and it starts with that beautiful hand-shaped carving known as Uinuku, from Waikato, which no one really knows a great deal about. And so for Pākehā, that's a kind of, it's come to symbolise the great unknown of Polynesian history and the incredible romance of, you know, the voyages down to New Zealand and the carrying of the tradition from Hawaiki. And then it goes through all the Victorian imagery and through Francis Hodgkins and into modernism, and it selects out some big names like Colin McCann, for example, and Ralph Hortetti and Pat Hanley and members of my parents' generation. So, you know, it was a way of giving a salute to that age group, and also to record it before it went on, and then coming forward to the present, looking at the influence of Polynesia on New Zealand painting and art practice as it's sort of manifesting itself today.
Does this mean we've sort of come full circle in a way? I mean, you've started off with early Māori, you know, Polynesian work, come through with sort of that Victorian thing, and now we've come right back again. I mean, if I was an artist and I was about to make a piece of art today, if you were a gambling man, what iconography would I most likely put into my painting?
Well, that's a really good question, because I suspect this is the fine line between where the writer, you know, is the writer forcing his own kind of warped interpretation onto these paintings, or, you know, is what he's saying actually got some resonance with other members of the community who also value that painting? And part of the time you want to accept everything that the artist says at face value. So if you drew a flower, you might tell me a big story about how you came to, you know, draw that flower because it reminded you of somebody that you had lost or wanted to get, or, you know, something like that. But you might be making that all up.
Right.
And I might be similarly making it all up. So, you know, in this kind of welter of symbols that we all live in, it's useful to have some kind of, you know, some kind of guide to what visual images mean to people. And I was hoping to capture something about our community in this selection.
As people have moved increasingly from rural settings and moved towards the cities over the years, has this reflected in what people paint, what they sculpt? I mean, it seems to me like we still see a lot of New Zealand landscape in works, or is there increasingly buildings and you know, cars and roads and that sort of stuff, cell phone towers?
Well, look, the landscape is always going to be quite dominant in New Zealand art practice because it's there, and it's quite easy to go up Mount Eden or, you know, wherever you happen to live, the nearest vantage point, and look out, and you don't have to look very far to see, you know, the endless ocean or the edge of the city. And there is this kind of existential angst in the heritage of New Zealand art and writing about what are we doing here. You know, we're just faced with all this kind of emptiness around us. Who are we? You know, is our imported culture, from Pākehā perspective, is it relevant anymore? How do we relate back to where we've come from? And actually, humans all seem to have this kind of symbolic shorthand whereby they use images to help them remember where they've come from and, you know, perhaps suggest where they're going. So, I mean, landscape's a big part of it, but if you look at landscape paintings, they tend to be not so much emblematic or iconic, because they're like big open spaces where, if you're looking at symbolic works, they tend to be concentrated into a small area, like a head on a coin or something, you know, of that nature.
Right. Now, you've managed to get into you're one of the finalists for this year's Montana Book Award, so you must be quite pleased about that.
Oh, yeah, I'm thrilled.
Because how long did this take you to put together?
Well, it had a long gestation, and, you know, much as I'm keen to talk about the selection process as being a writer's own selection, I've really had to collaborate with everybody who has provided the copyright permission. And that's an important thing about writing these days, is that you can't simply expect to be able to reproduce well-known works by artists and their estates without having a detailed and, you know, hopefully really fruitful exchange between them. So I'm really grateful to all the people that shared in the creation of this book, and some of New Zealand's most wonderful artists and writers have been very generous with copyright.
Look, thank you very much. It looks like a beautiful book, Art Icons of New Zealand. Good luck with the Montana process. Hope you come out with a trophy or a certificate for the wall, or whatever they give for the Montana Awards these days.
Thanks, guys. It's been a pleasure.
And the winners will be announced for the Montana Book Awards on the 27th of July. We'll be sure to let you know how Oliver and his book gets on. That's all we've got time for on the show today. If there's something you've missed or you'd like to hear again, publicaddress.net/radio. I've been Damien Christie.
And I'm Felicity Monk, and thanks to New Zealand On Air.